Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening in. We launched a new show last night, always cause for celebration. It got some amazing numbers in listeners. The show is Rebel Radio Music. It will be airing from 8 to 10 p.m. on Thursday nights from now on KHOI. After their show, I had a quick word with the hosts, Mr. McKen and Dr. J. Juan, and I wanted to share just a few seconds of our conversation with you.
We started feeling the vibe. We started talking. And I feel like I was really just there in a moment. Like, right. I really was connected.
It was incredible. We had a lot of fun.
You know, you feel like you're a stranger when you come to this. This is like all foreign to us. And then as soon as we sit down here and then we get into this place where we're like talking and we're vibing and then we're feeling really connected to the world out there. And then you start to get your voice, you start to get the feeling, it becomes empowering. Like, I feel like I'm on a high right now. I can't even lie. I feel really good. Yeah. I feel like this is gonna ride me right into next week.
I'm not gonna lie. When we started off, I was a little bit nervous, right? I was a little nervous because of the first show, but right, Alade. Once we started to play the music and feel the music, right, and then be able to talk to each other and communicate, and then also communicating to the people out there, building all those connections to the music, to the audience, and then I started to feel the warmth, the love.
Yeah, I did.
It was great.
So were you connected to the world?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were.
So I had used Facebook Live as a feed. Folks back home, back in New York, back in Brooklyn, Queens, in the Bronx, and so on and so forth. You know, I tell them I'm doing this, you know, get like one or two likes. People are not really like, you know, it's another thing. They probably think I'm trying to tell you to support someone else or something like that. But then I put the Facebook Live up and they see my face. They're like, everybody's like, are you serious? And then people started sharing it, right?
Yeah.
People, like friends of friends of friends and family. And then like my family was like, share it to other people because they were just jamming to the music.
Right.
Right. And then what made it even crazy was like all my travels. So I had people from Kenya, people from Dominican Republic, people from the West Coast. People were listening.
So how many people you think were listening?
Some professors from Iowa are saying, this is great. We like the history lesson and we're dancing too.
Right. Right.
So that felt good. It felt like, yes, that's exactly it. We want you to dance and groove, but also learn something.
Right. Right. It was 913, folks.
913 people were listening to
your
show.
On our launch.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
It is crazy. That is communicating with the world.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was great. And I mean, you know, I'm still getting text messages now. And everybody's like, oh, great show, you know, because it's like they felt in the vibe. And it was funny because some of our guests in the internet world, right, was like requesting music we was already going to play.
Why don't you describe a little bit what the mission of your show is?
Our show is called Rebel Music Radio. Myself, Alade McKen, and Julio Camarota, we are in the School of Education at Iowa State University in the Social Cultural Studies Department.
Mm-hmm. We really appreciate music that says something, that has a social commentary.
Definitely.
So I think that's sort of at the base of
the
what
core.
Rebel Music Radio is about. We want to share good music that's about being conscious, being aware, having a social message.
So what we wanted to do is that we wanted to highlight the music that has been silenced. We wanted to highlight art. We wanted to highlight culture. We wanted to highlight different experiences. We wanted to center women, people who've been not on the front line in the music, right? Mm-hmm. We have vinyl that we're trying to incorporate. We have guests trying to connect it to things that are happening right now socially and drawing those connections to music of the past. So there's different genres that speak about the particular messages, and there's different music within time frames as well. We wanted to make it very liberating.
What we're offering, what we're giving, what we're communicating is for the people here in Ames, Iowa, right, in the community, but also the broader community. Out there in the world, that, you know, this music is for you, for to energize, to inspire.
Tell us what time the show's at.
The show is at 8 p.m. to 10 p.m.
on Thursdays.
On Thursdays.
Every Thursday.
And we're really, and I want to say this, and we're really grateful for this opportunity.
Yes, thank you.
Because it's at the same time, what we're trying to give is what we're getting out of it. And I think that's the most important part.
Yeah.
And that's the great secret of radio. You you get so much from doing it.
Definitely.
I really do.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
So come on out and check us out. Right?
Yeah, and see you next Thursday.
Yep, okay.
And that was Mr. McCann and Dr. Jay Juan, KHOI's newest DJs with Rebel Radio Music, getting more than 900 listeners around the world to their show for the first time that they went on the air on Facebook and untold numbers on the air. Rebel Radio Music will air, like they said, on Thursday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. here on KHOI, so check them out. And many, many thanks to KHOI's Gail Seiler and Cynthia McClure for a totally awesome party that was thrown to launch the show with lots of great new folks in the station and lots of great food. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Always happy to bring in new community members to share their ideas and talents. And I hope you could hear from their comments that it's a great experience to be a producer on KHOI. Very rewarding. Last Sunday, an event occurred which reflected the new social and political realities many are facing in Ames and the surrounding area. This was a dinner held at St. Cecilia's Church in Ames, held specifically for immigrants. The dinner was combined with a workshop to help immigrants know their rights. It was also geared to help with strategies for contingency plans for coping with difficulties if they should occur. Lawyers and human rights experts led the workshops, and the information is a valuable resource if you're an immigrant, and also gives valuable insight to those who aren't into what their neighbors are learning to cope with. Here is Kay Puttock speaking with Jarrett Wendt, the pastoral associate at St. Cecilia's Church, where the dinner was held.
Jarrett Wendt is the pastoral associate of St. Cecilia's. Welcome, Jarrett.
Thank you.
How well attended was this dinner?
We had between 150 and 200 people there in total. Very well attended.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was full.
And what kind of people came?
Mostly Hispanic families, as well as a bunch of people from the community that were helping out, donating food and serving.
Yes, I understand all the food was donated.
Yes.
It's sort of a potluck.
Yeah, yeah. We had about 35 adults from the community, from St. Cecilia and from Amos and from around, provided the food, and about 20 of them stayed and served it as well and cleaned up afterwards. Very generous.
In addition to the dinner, which was attended by adults and children, so it's a sort of family feeling, it was sort of a workshop. And there was a lawyer, I believe.
Yes, several, yeah.
Okay, would you like to tell us about some of the things that they were told?
Sure. Father Jim, our pastor, gave a really nice welcoming speech, showed a lot of support and encouragement for them. I did a similar kind of speech after that.
The church and your pastor perceived a specific need.
Yeah.
Could you talk about that a bit?
He spoke a lot about fear, about the fear that they must be feeling and that people shouldn't be afraid. People shouldn't be afraid to go to Mass. People shouldn't be afraid that when they leave the house in the morning, they won't see their family when they come home, or they might not even come home. He spoke a lot to that fear and how it's not right to have that fear here in America. And he also just expressed the church's support and encouragement for the people, for the community. The need to not be alone, to not feel alone. I told them to look around. Food that was donated that night was from so many people in the community that care for them, support them. That's a sign of their love, to feel that, and also to be mindful of the speakers that were there that night to donate their time and their expertise, and to be aware of all the people that were around them, fellow immigrants that are going through this together, that they're not alone, and to get to know each other more, and to know that there are leaders in the Hispanic community that are working to support them as well. General message from us. And then we had Sonia Reyes-Snyder from the Iowa Department of Human Rights. She's the director of Latino Affairs. She spoke about a number of things, including knowing what your rights are, safety plan, racism.
Could you talk about some of those rights that people should be aware of?
One of the big things for immigrants to be aware of is their right to remain silent. In the case of an ICE agent coming to their door, they don't have to open the door unless there's a warrant with their name and address on it. If they're caught by ICE, they don't have to say anything, and they probably shouldn't say anything until they can have a lawyer present. We had Joanne Barton and Megan Lance, the immigration lawyers here in town. And we also had the Story County Legal Aid Society present. They didn't speak, but they were present afterwards for people to get to know them, to set up appointments with them. They also spoke about options for legalization, so pathways to getting a visa or a work permit or residency. Then they talked about the deportation process, knowing what to do in the case of ICE agents coming to a home or coming to a workplace or finding them in public. What's the family plan? What are the kids going to do? What are the spouses going to do if one spouse is arrested? They really recommended to memorize phone numbers because you might not have your cell phone available. Mm-hmm. So memorize your lawyer's phone number. Be in contact with a lawyer ahead of time so that you
but
have a relationship.
Is it in fact realistic to think that people have got a lawyer?
Right, and so that's part of the...
Is to get one,
yeah,
get a lawyer
yeah,
that you can call.
Yeah, to establish some kind of relationship or have a card. We work a lot with Barton Law, and they were there speaking last night,
mm-hmm.
Joanne Barton and Megan Lance, and they seem to be working pretty well with the people that we've been sending their way. So even if they don't have a relationship already, to have that phone number.
So a lot of people memorized. Probably established a relationship that evening with
possibly,
with
yeah.
Lawyers.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's important. A lot of them know our deacon mm-hmm. Has been very active with them, pass them along to a lawyer, and they're recommending for people to have something in place for their children and their finances. If someone gets arrested,
they might be deported and their children would be here.
Yeah, so if someone is arrested, to have somebody designated as the guardian,
mm-hmm.
There are certain documents that can be written up for that. To designate them as a guardian so that they can keep them in school or they can send them back or whatever needs to be done. And same with finances, bank accounts and all that.
Right.
They don't have access to that once they're arrested and sent back. Yeah.
Now, what about people that couldn't be there who might happen to be listening? What could they do to get more information?
There's a lot of information online. There are certain organizations that make that information very public, one called Justice for Immigrants. There's information online. There are safety plans available online. We have some copies of safety plans that people can ask us for.
Do you have office hours? Are the office hours when they can pick up information or cards?
Yeah, absolutely. 8:30 to 4:30, I think.
Every weekday.
Yeah, and then close at 2:30 on Fridays.
8:30 to 4:30, except on Fridays, mm-hmm. We close early. You can help them out there and guide them to find some
yeah,
of this
and absolutely,
stuff.
They call in too. And
we'll put
we'll
some of this on,
them.
You know, on our website sure. when we air the show and when we put the show online. So.
Wonderful. We're just so grateful for Amos,
Amid Iowa Organizing Strategy.
They came to us with the idea in the first place. They were looking for us to host it because the Hispanic community trusts St. Cecilia mm-hmm. because of the mass that's been there for years now. And gratitude for Amos, for our speakers, for all the donors, their time and their food. And
I've been talking to Jared Wendt, who's the pastoral associate at St. Cecilia's Parish here in Ames, about a immigrant dinner that they had on Sunday, the 2nd of April. Thank you.
Jared Wendt, pastoral associate at St. Cecilia's Church, speaking with KHY reporter Kay Puttock about the recent workshop and dinner held at St. Cecilia's Church in Ames. To reach the parish for more information or help, for you or someone who needs help, you can call 515-233-3092. That's 515-233-3092. As mentioned, Amos, a Mid-Iowa Organizing Strategy, was the organization that instigated the dinner workshop. Rick Exner from Amos is on the phone. Rick, hi. Thanks for joining us. Rick, one of the things I just want to ask you first off, this may sound like kind of an obvious question, but it's not obvious to myself or many. What exactly is ICE and what does that mean when they were talking about ICE agents coming to one's home?
ICE is Immigration and Customs Enforcement, part of Homeland Security. ICE can come to your home. ICE can come to your workplace. ICE can take you out of a quick trip. ICE has done big raids in the past. We know about the big raids in Marshalltown and Northeast Iowa.
So these are federal agents?
They're federal agents. They're enforcing federal immigration law. And therein lies a division of powers because it is not to local government to enforce federal immigration law. All the noise that you hear now about we're going to bring the hammer down on sanctuary cities, basically the law is that it is not the job of local law enforcement to enforce federal immigration law. Cities and counties that are making declarations that say they're going to protect their residents are simply stating the law as it exists, that division.
Rick, can you give us a bigger picture of the context within which this dinner was held at St. Cecilia's? It's a little bit of a new type of event in the community. What's the bigger picture here?
Part of the context is that through Inclusive Ames and through Amos, we're in touch with both Sheriff Paul Fitzgerald and with Chief of Police Charles Seihash, of the Ames Police Force. both those gentlemen, I think, are allies of the immigration community. And that's one thing I tried to convey in the meeting. People are not in a state of being able to make these fine distinctions, and it doesn't make it any easier that when ICE comes to your door, very often their uniforms say police. They're not police. So if someone comes to your door, expect the worst. Also, we don't know about police policies outside of Ames, of the other communities in Story County outside of Ames. But it's important that if you have information about a crime or you need information about a crime, you should feel safe in contacting Ames Police or contacting the Office of the Sheriff in Nevada.
Good to know. Is Amos planning to hold more of these dinners?
We can certainly do that, and we can make lawyers available without charge, lawyers providing pro bono services and lawyers for nonprofit organizations in the state. And we told them that's one thing that we could do. If they don't want to be driving because of fear of what could happen to them on the road, there are people in Ames who would be happy to drive them to go shopping or go to the consulate in Omaha. You know, depending on what your needs are, there are people who can help with that. Now, whether we can get people to accept that help, we'll have to see, but we will keep offering that.
And if somebody wants the help, what is the best thing to do?
Probably contact Jarrett at St. Cecilia because they have a relationship with St. Cecilia. Otherwise, they could certainly contact me.
And how does one do that?
My cell is 515-231-5581.
Okay, could you repeat that?
231-5581.
Thank you.
Another thing that I talked about at the meeting is that we're also in contact with the city council about a safe city resolution and also with the school board, which is going to consider a safe schools resolution actually this coming Monday. I read them a text of what might be the resolution and asked them if they thought that would be helpful, and they did. It wasn't an enthusiastic endorsement, but nobody said that it was going to be useless, and nobody said it would be worse than useless. So we're taking that information and moving forward on that. And I also want to say we have a lot to do outside of the immigrant community, particularly if you're a member of a faith community. Talking in your faith community about what your congregation can do to support sanctuary or some flavor of sanctuary. In other words, you may not be housing a refugee family or an immigrant family, but maybe your congregation has other ways that you can support congregations that are. And we will be having a citywide meeting to basically share our experiences congregation to congregation, and that's going to happen sometime in April, I'm pretty sure.
Is Amos prepared to supply some support to a congregation that wants to organize something?
There are various kinds of support. Certainly, we're doing that in Amos, and if people want more information, they can give me a call. We do an email bulletin of news and analysis, sometimes several times a week, so people are welcome to that. And also, there is an entity now called the Iowa Sanctuary Movement, iowasanctuary.org. Just put it in your search engine, and that will give you some idea of what's being done around the state and some ideas of resources. But again, people can call me if they have specific needs or questions.
Okay, give your number one more time.
515-231-5581.
Okay.
In fact, you have to leave a message because I get a lot of junk calls, too.
Thank you, Rick. Really appreciate it. This is Rick Exner from Amos talking about resources. If you're having problems or just want to get prepared in regards to immigration issues, thank you so much for joining us, Rick.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Morning. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for today, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us. Mr. Douglas Gentile is here with us. You may be familiar with Mr. Gentile as one of the hosts of Tom and Doug's show. Or you may be familiar with Mr. Gentile as an internationally recognized professor of psychology at Iowa State University.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't do that.
He recently conducted a study of more than 13,000 adolescents together with a team of French researchers and has found a link between video game exposure and sexism. He says that popular video games typically portray female characters as attractive, scantily clad, and generally have limited roles appearing in sexually suggestive ways, which sends a powerful message that can influence the attitudes of gamers. Thank you for coming by, Doug. Who did you exactly study when you did this?
So this study was carried out in France, and rather than, you know, the way we often get our study participants where you kind of put a sign-up sheet or something and then the people who are interested sign up, in this case, this was much more of a random selection, so it's actually very representative of the area of France, and it was over 13,000 11 to 19-year-olds.
How did you get 13,000 11 19-year-olds to cooperate with you? That alone is a study.
Yes. Well, and for that, I have to thank my French colleagues because they did all that hard work.
Okay.
But because it was such a big study, we didn't have a lot of time with them, didn't get to ask them a lot of questions, but we did ask them about, you know, how much, you know, they played video games, how much television they watch, a couple questions about, you know, their religiosity. And then this question about women, which is a pretty bald sexist statement. I'm not sure that we expected anyone would even endorse it, but, you know, basically the statement was women are made primarily for having and raising children.
That was a statement you put in the yes, questionnaire?
Yes, and asked people to agree with, you know, that statement. And so that's a fairly traditional, stereotypical sexist gender role. And what we found is that, you know, the more that people watch television, the more they endorse that. The more they play video games, the more they endorse that. The more religious they are, the more they endorse that. Boys are more likely to endorse that than girls. And when you kind of put all these pieces together along with SES, higher SES, less likely to endorse that.
What's SES?
Socioeconomic status. So higher income people tended to have less sexist attitudes. When you put these all together, one of the interesting things was that the television viewing stopped being a significant predictor of sexist attitudes. We're not exactly sure what that means, but I interpret that as showing that we've really made some progress on television of showing the diverse range of roles that women can have. You know, back in the 70s and 80s, you know, the roles were still very limited on television. That's changed a lot. Whereas in video games, it really hasn't. For example, in the, you know, highly popular game series Grand Theft Auto, there are a number of female characters. There are only three things you can do with them. You can stare at them. You can pay them for sex, or you can kill them.
Wow.
I have teenage daughters. I want them to have more options than that.
Yeah.
So that's a, you know, sorry.
Let me take a drink here.
Strikingly limited set of roles. And even the women in video games that we think of perhaps as strong characters, they tend to be strong only in a very particular masculine way, which is they are fighters. You know, they can kill things. Again, you know,
and they tend to look really sexy while they do it,
and be wearing almost nothing somehow. Yeah, they're fighting with, you know, a bikini on rather than you know, proper battle armor or whatever. And so, even that, you know, and we didn't study this in this study, but there have been others that look at that, which is when you're still pairing this kind of sexy image with violence, then that also adds to attitudes towards violence against women. Because women, even though they're strong characters in these games, there's still that link with violence is something that is okay with women, right?
It links sex with violence,
and particularly, you know, women with violence. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that there aren't some women warriors out there. It's not that there aren't women who probably, you know, are happy to go around and kill. And so that should be part of the panoply of, you know, things.
But you can be pretty sure they're not doing it in bikinis.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And again, we should be showing the full range of things women can be. So I think, in a sense, this is good news.
How's it good news?
If we think about sexist attitudes, they're notoriously difficult to change. Mm-hmm. And they're also difficult to even notice, right? No, no one wants to claim they're sexist, or most people don't want to. And they don't really even know where their attitudes came from. They're usually things that we can't change, something about the family of origin, something about culture of the community they grew up in, being a member of a religion that historically has had stereotypical views about women. These are not things that even if you've noticed, you know, my attitudes are a little more sexist than I want them to be. Those aren't things you can change. That's just, you know, your past. That's the culture you're in. So if the attitudes can be changed just by the types of games you play, that's something you have control over. So we could be selecting games that either portray women in a wider range of roles or focus mostly on female characters, or, you know, things that help us to expand our idea of, you know, all the things women can be rather than limit them.
Did you find video games that do that?
Well, there aren't a lot yet.
Right.
But my hope is that studies like this will start having an impact even among the designers, and they'll start, you know, because that's what happened with television, is it took a lot of, you know, the researchers to show, look, first of all, there aren't women on television, and when they are, they're on these very limited roles. And what do they talk about? They talk about their appearance and their relationships, and that's, you know, women care about politics too. And so these studies started coming out, and that got the writers to pay attention and start giving women their full range of emotions and roles. Maybe studies like this will have a similar impact in the gaming community.
What happens with a study like this once it's, I presume you publish the results, and then what happens after that? How does a study like this end up finding its way into a larger influence?
Well, one of the ways is we come on KHOI 89.1 FM. You know, that's part of it is we, you know, science has too often lived in a bubble. We publish in our academic journals and leave it at that. And so it becomes a kind of echo chamber. We're just talking to other scientists. And that's one of the problems. That's why I think the public have stopped being quite as, or they're more skeptical of science nowadays than they used to be. I think that some of that's for the wrong reasons, but part of the right reason is that scientists have not done a good job of explaining why what they're doing is important, what their studies are, what the limitations of their studies are. The few times you get a scientific finding in the press, it's made so extreme that it's no longer, even the scientist who did the study no longer really agrees with what's being said about it. So I think it's incumbent on us to get out and talk about how it's done and, you know, what do we know from it and what don't we know. And I think that's, you know, that's the important thing is getting that information out. Now, will that really change the gaming community? I don't know. The fact that I'm getting lots of hate mail about this.
Are you really?
Yes, I am.
Explain. What kind of hate mail are you getting?
Oh, even before the study was published, one of the main critics of the video game research, Christopher Ferguson, who's a professor at Stetson University, published on the Huffington Post. He has a blog there about how what a terrible study it was and how we're making such extreme claims, even before it was published, which is interesting. You know, where's he getting his information from? And it's likely the gaming industry. But there are people out there who are willing to just be combative for the sake of it or willing to stand up for the money-making organization, which in this case would be the media organizations rather than the researchers. And so that's part of it. And then they have a big following of people who've been trained to dislike the credible researchers. And so I'm sure tens of thousands of gamers worldwide hate me. So that's nice. It means I'm doing something right, right?
Yeah. Well, it means that the study's being noticed.
Yeah.
Interesting. So, Doug, you mentioned that there was something new down the road for you.
Ah, yes. We have another study coming out soon. And, in fact, Christopher Ferguson's already, before that one's been published, already attacked that one as well.
So what's wrong now?
Well, according to him, anything we do is wrong.
You've got a hater.
Yes, we do. This is a study of seven different countries, Croatia and Australia, Romania and the U.S., China, and I forget all of them off the top of my head. But again, looking at video games, in this case, looking specifically at violent video gameplay and whether people are more likely to hold aggressive attitudes and behave aggressively if they play these games more. So it's a large correlational study across many cultures. And what makes it unique is the fact that we used the same measures across all these cultures. One of the things that makes cross-cultural research difficult is often, you know, I study it this way in the U.S., but you study it a different way in Germany. And so then we don't quite know how comparable the results are. So in this case, we used exactly the same measures across all of these different countries and does allow us to see, you know, are there differences among cultures? Because people often say that. You know, it turns out it's not really true.
Really? The human race is the human race?
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
And although people don't really like thinking about this, we all know it to be true. Whatever you practice, you get better at it. And if what you practice in a game is being vigilant for enemies, assuming people are going to be aggressive, you get rewarded when you choose an aggressive response against them. That becomes kind of the way you start seeing the world. You start being a little more vigilant. You start expecting hostility around you, and you become easier to provoke and more willing to, you know, say something unkind when you are provoked. So have an aggressive response. Mm-hmm. And basically we see the more they play violent video games, the more they start having these types of aggressive thoughts and feelings, and it can start leaking out in their behaviors. We're not talking about school shootings or extreme violence. We're talking about the everyday types of aggressive mm-hmm. behaviors that we, you know, we encounter. People being rude, saying unkind things, maybe pushing and shoving, or even at, you know, the extreme that we usually measure, hitting.
Interesting. So video games are an opportunity to study human nature in the work you do.
Yeah.
You must have to watch a lot of video games yourself in doing this.
I do try to play most of the games that I study.
So how have you changed?
I like most other American men, even though I'm, you know, pretty clearly a pacifist, you know, you put the violent stimulus in front of me and I will get all hepped up and,
so you
know,
feel
the adrenaline
it.
Rush. And, uh-huh. and it really is adrenaline. You know, in other uh-huh. studies we've measured, it's adrenaline and testosterone and noradrenaline and cortisol. These are the mm-hmm. so-called stress hormones. And if you ask a violent gamer why they like to play, they'll often tell you they like the adrenaline rush.
Mm-hmm.
The interesting thing about that, those are the same cocktail of hormones you would drop in your bloodstream if I punched you right now. So you know it's just a game, but your body reacts as if you're in a real fight.
Mm-hmm.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So your brain is still treating it like real aggression, mm-hmm. even though you know you're safe. And that's part of what makes the game fun, of course, is that you can have normally when we're feeling that set of physiological feelings, we're not enjoying what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But here, when you're playing a game, you get that full set of physiology.
In the comfort of a chair.
In the comfort of a chair, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much
for
coming by and talking with us. Douglas Gentile, professor of psychology at Iowa State University, and also one of the founders of KHOI, actually.
Yeah.
So good to have you here, and thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Ursula.
Yeah, bye-bye. This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm your host for this hour, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining us and staying with us for Local Talk. It's time for KHOI's Municipal Update. Here's Susan Guiazda, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Welcome, Susan.
Welcome. Great to be here. And I brought with me Eric Coles, our civil engineer with our Public Works Department, because everybody wants to hear about the latest on street construction.
Okay. Thank you for coming, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just get right into it.
Okay.
So lots of things are going on. Start of a new month. It's April. And the first thing I just wanted to remind people of is that tomorrow, on Saturday, April 8th, we're going to be doing a ribbon cutting at the Ames Municipal Airport. We're in the midst of a modernization project, which includes the new hangar, was privately funded and then given to the City of Ames, as well as right now under construction is a new airport terminal. Very exciting things happening at the Ames Municipal Airport. So tomorrow morning on Saturday from 8:30 to 9:30, we will be doing a ribbon cutting for the new hangar with a program at 9 a.m. And we invite the entire community to come out and celebrate with us. In the middle of this, the ISU Flying Cyclones will be holding a fly-in breakfast. They'll be doing a fundraising breakfast for their club, and they're going to have airplanes on display, some equipment out there, really exciting, family-friendly kind of experience. It will be crowded and busy, and that goes from 7 to 11 a.m., and we basically say we have an event within the event. Our ribbon cutting will again be at from 8:30 to 9:30 with the program at 9.
Okay, and that's tomorrow.
Tomorrow, Saturday, April 8th.
Wow. All airplane fans, this is the moment.
Apparently, it is something to see. I have to say, I've never been to a fly-in breakfast, but I'm really excited to make it to this one, and I've been promised a very good time.
So what exactly is a fly-in breakfast?
So you would actually fly your plane to the airport from around the state, from around the region, come in, have breakfast.
So people are going to come from all over for the breakfast.
Yeah, and as well as the public is welcome to come. There'll be, again, it is a fundraiser, so the breakfast will be there. They'll be doing short airplane rides for a relatively small fee, but you could take a little buzz around the community on a plane. And then the planes will be there for display.
Okay, lots of fun.
Very exciting. Before I get into anything else, because I do have a lot, I wanted to let Eric give an update on construction because it is probably the biggest thing that we get questions about. Street construction season has begun. There are a lot of exciting projects out there. It is a little inconvenient for a short time, but the long-term gain is always worth it.
I was going to say, if you're saying construction is exciting, if exciting is being inconvenienced and getting from point A to point B. We're up and running again. Contractors are going to start working out there. And we've got a couple larger projects going on. Probably the one that's going to have the most impact for people is the South 3rd, South 4th project. It's a kind of a combination of a reconstruction, but there's going to be some closures down there, so that – you know, connection between University Avenue and South Duff is going to be a bit tricky for a bit. That's actually going to start Sunday night. The contractor is going to come in and actually shut down South 4th from the Squaw Creek Bridge over to South Hazel.
So, Squaw Creek Bridge, is that it on Duff?
That's the Squaw Creek Bridge on South 4th.
Okay.
So just east of University there.
Yeah.
So they're going to set up a closure there, and that's going to be fully closed between the north side of the bridge and then over to South Hazel. But there's four phases of the project, and they're going to roll the first two phases together. The portion from the full closure at Hazel over to Grand Avenue, they're going to construct under traffic. So you'll have head-to-head traffic in that particular area, but once you hit Hazel, you won't be able to get through any further beyond that. And that's scheduled to begin Sunday night. That closure will take place. SciRide's going to reroute. The detour is going to take you, if you're going to go from, if you're heading eastbound and you're coming up north on University, you'd go up to Lincoln Way and then take a right on Lincoln Way and head east and then come back down Grand Avenue would be the official detour for that, and the reverse for going westbound on 4th Street. So, and then the second phase, that phase will probably take somewhere in the range of 4 to 6 weeks to get done. But, again, we'll have a nice new street when we're done there, so that'll be kind of nice. The third and fourth phase are from Grand Avenue over to South Duff. And we do have a full reconstruction section of that as well. So there'll be a full closure from Grand Avenue over to Walnut or, let's see, I believe
when you say Grand Avenue to South Duff, these are parallel streets.
Oh, I'm sorry, South Grand, just south of Hy-Vee. So there'll be a closure there just where the new pavement ends by Hy-Vee there, and then that'll go over to Walnut. for a full closure. And then again, it's a minor rehab, if you will, where there'll be head-to-head traffic to maintain traffic in the area between Walnut and South Duff. That's probably going to start, you know, early to mid-June, I would say. And then we're hoping that that's completed in time for football season to kick in so that we're not affecting, you know, people coming to Jack Trice for Cyclone games. So that's kind of the one of the larger projects that we have going on that's going to have some major impact, but that's condensed into hopefully just summertime construction.
So am I understanding you correctly, this is the continuation of Grand? Is this what you're talking about?
Nope. This is the east-west portion. So the South Grand Avenue project is I can talk about that a little bit. That's gaining some ground. I know people are excited to see that happen.
Yeah, no, I'm just trying to understand.
So I always think about if you are leaving Hy-Vee and wanting to go to Target, that's the road you're taking.
That's the road.
Okay,
yep,
got it.
Yep. So it changes from South 4th to South 3rd right about Hy-Vee.
Got it.
So,
okay.
But that's going to have a significant impact, and that's going to be inconvenient for a lot of people. But we had thought about doing that project, you know, while Iowa State was out of session, but the scope of the project wasn't going to allow us to do that. And we figured in working with Iowa State that if we impact people now that are familiar with the area rather than impacting people as they're moving in, we thought that would be, you know, more desirable, if you will. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, as you travel east on that road, you'll see there's a lot more student apartments.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The new Stadium View apartments is right on South 4th.
Yep, that's correct.
So there's a lot of impact. We understand that a lot of people will be impacting. We're trying not to affect them during move in, move out.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And we're going to get that part of the project done first and then move to the east.
We actually did that on another project here. And typically in campus town, we'd say, you know, only from the time Iowa State's out of session to the time they go back in session.
Mm-hmm.
But the scope of that particular project, we tried that. And it actually worked very, very well. So
now, is this road in bad shape or are you enlarging it? Or?
It's in tough shape. Uh-huh. It just needs some rehabilitation there.
Okay.
It's not. There's not going to be any new width there.
Mm-hmm.
The section from kind of the wall or the Hy-Vee area, that section is going to go to a 3-lane section with bike lanes. So if you've traveled down 6th Street west of Grand Avenue, going over to Brookside Park, that roadway section will look exactly like that does. So you have a center turn lane, two through lanes, and then bike lanes on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
So that was kind of some input we got from the community, and that's the
connectivity for the biking community.
Correct, correct.
Yeah, and bikers and pedestrians are affected by this project, just as vehicles will be affected. So there is no throughway for pedestrians and bikers. They need to follow detours as well.
Yeah, we'll have signed detours for pedestrians and bikes as well. So
okay, thank you.
That'll all be signed. Another one that's coming up will be the rest of Clark Avenue, so from the railroad tracks down to Lincoln Way, kind of by where KFC is there today in the in the car wash. We didn't get that finished up last year, and we allowed that in the contract to be completed this spring. So we heard the contractor is going to come in there probably end of April to start that work, and that'll be a full closure in that area. So that'll be shut down kind of the same way it was on the north piece from Main Street down to the railroad. So that'll have some impact. If you've been to City Hall recently, and our employee parking lot on the west side of the building is starting a reconstruction phase now. That started on Monday. And if you're going to City Hall, all the public parking is still going to remain the same. Really, the only effect is to the employee parking.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's going to be heavy equipment and material and workers and things going on there. So as you come into the building, all of the sidewalks around the building are going to be open all of the time. All of the doors to the building are going to be accessible all of the time. But just something to think about that if you were parking in those metered stalls in City Hall parking lot, you know, some of those are going to be affected. So, but the public parking that's lot MM, which is the far western portion of the lot over by the Veterans Memorial, that's going to remain public parking at all times. So that'll have some impact for those coming to City Hall. On the development side, if you've been down Lincoln Way where the old Swift Stop used to be and Chinese Home Cooking, there's a big
looks
hole
different.
There today.
There's a big hole there.
Correct.
Yeah.
We worked with the developer on that, and there's going to be some impact on South Sheldon coming up shortly where they're going to not allow southbound traffic on South Sheldon for 4 to 5 days to do some storm sewer work for the site. But the greater impact is going to be after Iowa State is out of session, similar to when the other apartments went in, they're going to need to take a lane of traffic down. And their plan there is to do 2 through lanes of traffic and then have a center dedicated turn lane to get people onto North Sheldon or South Sheldon.
So this is on Lincoln Way.
This is on Lincoln Way. So,
this is the long-term plan to bring it to 3 lanes.
To bring it to 3 lanes for the project.
For the project.
Just for the project. When the project is complete, it's going to go back to its regular configuration. Yep. Mm-hmm. That thing's going to be, once that goes in, I believe Iowa State's out of session the 5th or the 6th of May, that following Monday. The intent is to take that down to that 3-lane section, and it's probably going to be that way for close to a year and a half.
Wow. Okay.
So, but it's a great project. You know, it's something that the community, for the most part, is looking forward to. There's going to be some interesting things going on. They're going to have some retail on the main floor, just like the other buildings did.
It's going to be basically an apartment complex with retail on the ground floor.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's going to be very similar to the 2320 project and the Foundry project that went in there at Lincoln Way and Lynn. So very, very neat projects. It's fun to be a part of those. And, you know, you get to coordinate those things and work with those developers, which is kind of fun on our side. But, you know, there's certain things that we want our expectations to be met because, you know, that part of the world is very heavily traveled.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a huge impact. And that morning, you know, and looking at the traffic patterns, usually you'd have a morning rush and then kind of trickle through the afternoon. And then in the evening, there'd be a little bit of a rush. But in that particular section of Lincoln Way, it's pretty much steady.
Pretty busy.
All the time, except for the middle of the night. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, what we find at a lot of those projects is that people sort of voluntarily reroute themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. So a project that will take a year and a half, people will find new traffic patterns.
Yeah.
Obviously, 3 lanes is less than 4 lanes. There'll be a funneling effect and a little bit of more of a wait at the light. So you'll find that people will just redirect themselves to other places. And sometimes that traffic doesn't come back. Sometimes people find that they like the other way better. And we always say it's an opportunity to explore your community.
That's true. But we're going to look too at, you know, as that project comes to fruition there, the signal timing. So, you know, we're going to watch the traffic pattern, see how things are going. And if we needed to adjust the signal timings there to allow more east-west traffic to pass
through. Signal
on
Sheldon and Lincoln Way, I'd like it if you would look at the timing of that.
Yep. So
I don't like that signal.
They're going to adjust that one. That's one that I always hit, too. Yeah. It's a rarity that I get through there on green.
So I see that Susan has a lot of things to say. Is there anything anything else you feel you need to say before we wrap up?
Yeah, I've got one more.
Okay.
We just bid the Lincoln Way and Franklin intersection reconstruction. That's going to be taking place this summer as well. So just west of that Sheldon area project. Don't know exact schedules yet because we just bid the project, but favorable bid. So that's going to be kicking off, I'd say, within the next month.
Okay.
For that. So there's going to be impact there, too. And that's a full reconstruction, adding turn lanes. And that's somewhat related to the development that took place there at the old middle school track. So that'll be upcoming as well. But we'll be working with Susan to get press releases out and things like that and working to make sure that our construction update page is up to date for all of those projects as well as all the other smaller jobs we've got going on around town, too.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Come again next month. I'm sure there'll be more.
Okay.
And all those projects are available on our website at cityofames.org/construction. We keep that page updated. So if you miss something or are curious about an upcoming project, just again, our website just has a ton of information.
Uh-huh. Okay, Susan, we have about 2 minutes.
Okay. So if I don't get through everything, again, remember cityofames.org for all your city-related news, just some dates for your calendar. The City of Ames has partnered with the Ames Foundation to host another tree planting. We are doing these as a proactive effort to mitigate some of the trees that are going to come down due to the emerald ash borer. We're being very proactive in taking those ash trees down early, but we're also being proactive in replanting. So the Ames Foundation, along with City of Ames staff, will be looking at a tree planting around the Inez Grove neighborhood. On April 22nd, that is a Saturday, most of that tree planting is done in the morning, and volunteers can go to the Ames Foundation website, amesfoundation.org, and find the link to the Sign Up Genius and take a spot. It's a great family-friendly event. Groups, scouting groups, lots of different people get involved. Saturday, April 22nd. Also, regarding trees, the City of Ames partners with Ames Trees Forever to do a tree voucher program. This would be for a tree that you want to plant in your own yard. On Saturday, April 29th, you can attend a brief program at one of two local garden centers, Earl May or Country Landscapes, and you will receive a $50 tree voucher and a bag of mulch towards planting a tree in your own neighborhood. That's, again, an Ames Trees Forever, City of Ames. It's our electric departments and our public works departments are partnering on that program.
You plant those on private property?
You plant those on your own property, and we just give you a $50 voucher towards the cost. So, again, it's encouraging planting of trees, encouraging people to look at their landscaping, try to avoid that stormwater runoff, and beautify our community all at the same time. We have a concert coming up. The City of Ames Auditorium has partnered to bring in the Air Force Band on April 26th. This is a free concert at 6 p.m. Wednesday, April 26th. We do ask that you call the community center and reserve your tickets, but there is no cost for that. We have about 800 seats in our auditorium. We want to make sure everybody has a seat. You can call and reserve a ticket at 239-5365. That's 239-5365. Or you can email, again, that information's on our website, cityofames.org. Look for the Air Force Band concert on April 26th, and you'll get information on how to email. Just a few other things. We're probably running out of time.
One more minute.
Hydrant flushing continues around the community. Mm-hmm. You've probably seen our trucks out there. We flush the hydrants every spring to reduce mineral and deposits in the water and then to check for hydrant maintenance. That will be wrapping up. If you want to see in real time which hydrants have been flushed and which ones still need to be flushed, look at our website, cityofames.org/hydrants, and there's a real-time map right on there. It's a great it's a fun thing to watch, and they've gotten – so this program, when I first started, took 4 or 5 weeks. Now they've got it down to about 10 days. We've had some challenging weather recently with all the rain, but I think they're pretty much on schedule, so that project is wrapping up.
Okay. So. Thank you, Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer, and Eric Coles from the City of Ames with the road update. Evan, we have two words from our sponsors. Can you take us out with those and the Local Talk theme? And this has been Local Talk on KHOI. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.
Funding for KHOI is provided by London Fest, an all-day extravaganza. Sponsored by Cafe Diem and London Underground, London Fest brings you European food and fun right here in Ames on April 22nd from 2 p.m. to 12 a.m. Find out more information about this at London Fest Ames on Facebook.
KHOI is funded in part by the Ames Chamber of Commerce. Find job opportunities throughout Ames and Story County at workinames.com. Again, that's workinames.com.